All right. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Culk. It's approximately 10 minutes after 3 on July 10th, 2013. We are still in our regular scheduled commission meeting. We're in the administrative portion of the meeting. I don't have any open comments, but I would defer to my colleagues if they have anything.
I have no opening comments right now.
No comments.
Okay, great. With that, we have two items on consent. I would move passage of items on consent.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since you're not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right, thanks, Darrell. Okay, item B1 I see is withdrawn because we took care of that already, right, Sarah?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you, ma'am. Okay, item B2, amended application for waiver of procedures and time schedules for a Kidder-Stutzman County's reroute, if you will. Mr. Leon.
Okay, I tried to point out that we have this amendment to their application that we just got on Monday. And so I hope you've had a chance to kind of glance at it. But this is for Minnesota Power's reroute of their DC line. There is a segment about 0.7 miles long in Stutzman County that goes around a wetland. And it stays on... There's two landowners involved there. It stays on those same landowners' property, and those two landowners are both fine with it. They've signed options for easements or easements or something like that for it. And Minnesota Power is asking that we do this just on a notice of opportunity for hearing instead of having a hearing, going up there and having the hearing. That would be somewhat unusual for us to issue a site permit without having a hearing first. We did do it, and they pointed out here in their application for the Senex pipeline reroute back in 2002. That was a similar situation where the landowner was, I think, Cass Electric, and they wanted it moved a little bit. And we had them file a siting application like they have here and issued a notice of opportunity for it, then issued the permit without getting any comments from anybody. So it is something we've done before. The law in Chapter 4922, the Siting Act, has kind of a mixed signal on this. It says in 4922.07, I'll say directly what it says, the commission, after hearing and upon a finding that a proposed facility is of such length, design, location, or purpose that it will produce minimal adverse effects, or after hearing upon a finding that a demonstrated emergency exists, blah, 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 may... issue an order waiving specific procedures and time schedules, including but not limited to applications, notices, and hearings. And so it seemed to imply that you need to have a hearing first. But in 4922.13.2, it says specifically that the commission shall not be required to hold a public hearing on an application for the transfer of a certificate or a permit, or an application for a waiver of procedures and time schedules, but shall publish a notice of opportunity for a public hearing in the official newspaper of each county in which any portion of the facility is located. So, while 4922.07 appears to say we could have a hearing, 4922.13 says we don't need a hearing.
In the Senex case, is that directly, what's the word, analogous to this case? I mean, are they pretty much the same thing in play? So we could
pretty much. In this case, the line itself was grandfathered, so it was never sited.
Okay.
And so there isn't an existing corridor. I guess you could say that the law kind of provided one in the Siting Act with the 350 feet from the center of the route, but... So that is a difference. In the Senex case, there was a corridor, and we didn't go outside of it.
Okay. Well, I guess, I mean, I'd be curious to hear what Randy and Julie think, but for me, if it's the same landowners, if there are minimal changes, and we have the ability to just say, okay, well, why wouldn't we do that?
And that's my feeling, too, is that okay. To drive all the way up there for a hearing if we don't need to, and then nobody shows up. And
They would still do the due diligence of making sure they've done the SHPO concurrence and those kind of things.
Yes, we have a complete application.
Okay.
Well, I'm reviewing it now, but and we'll have a notice of opportunity, so somebody can request a hearing if they have a problem with it.
Okay.
I agree. I think I appreciate that you've dug into the, you know, specifics on the legality of it and that we're following the intent of the law. And, you know, why would we? Because it says, why would we have a hearing? It states that, you know, state law to route transmission facilities in orderly manner that's compatible in environmental and efficient preservation and efficient use of resources. So, I mean, if it's typically that we have a hearing, I want to make sure that there's some place that says we don't have to have a hearing. But I'm assuming that you're saying 49-22-13 when it says they can apply for an act, they can apply for a waiver of procedures and time schedules. This is a waiver of procedures.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm fine with it too then.
Okay. So, Randy?
Thank you.
Sorry.
He's got his two bullets. He's moving.
Yeah. He's ready to roll. Well, I am fine with doing this one, but I just want, you know, to the extent it seems like what we do quickly becomes precedent, and I mean, it's obvious in this case because they dug up the Senex case as their precedent for why this should be. And so I just want to be clear about something. I looked at the map with Jerry to see, and it was a map that I could make out several farmsteads within a few miles of this. So I'm pretty confident that had there been a residence somewhere pretty close by here, I would have been able to see it on the map, and there were not. But I'm kind of jumping ahead in item B5 here. Part of the language talks about no landowner opposes the movements, and later on, each owner of real property on which the adjustment is to be located, and then some more language, then do not oppose the adjustment. And in this case, too, kind of one of the big factors is the fact that the landowners are pleased with this. But I think we should always be at least reserving the right to look at it differently if the new line goes close to somebody else's mm-hmm. land.
Absolutely.
Even though this landowner likes it, it might be just to get it off to the edge of his or her land and let it be an eyesore to someone else. And so with that in mind, that just because the landowner likes it does not necessarily mean I will always agree with all of these. I agree with this one.
Sure.
I asked the same question of Jerry. So,
we'll bring a notice of opportunity back on next agenda.
Fair enough. Does that give us enough time to do it?
Yeah. They just want to get it done this year, so
okay.
I don't think we're having too much of a difference on the time schedules doing it this way. It's about
all
the
right.
same time.
And I'd just throw it for Randy and Julie. I mean, you probably already thought of this, but I mean, if any time any commissioner wants a hearing, I don't think the other two would ever say no on a hearing, because if the commissioner asks for a hearing and you don't give him or her that hearing, you've guaranteed you got a no vote going into the process. So I just, if you ever, I mean, you just always have that right. You just say, I want to do a hearing, and that's kind of the end of it. So, okay. Anything else, Jerry, you need on that one?
Kind of. No, I think we're good. That means we probably won't need counsel under consent there on this case.
I saw that up front, but hey, you never know. There might still
yeah.
be somebody that requests a hearing. We're giving them till someone else might want to come in.
Yeah.
Okay, testing and safety revenue and aging report. Ms. Fedorchek.
Josh has sent out this aging report for bills, and I just wanted to delinquent bills talk about what has been the process in the past for collecting on these delinquent accounts. What do we want to do so we can, you know, move forward?
Have Mr. Gallion give us his viewpoint.
Discussed yet with us as commissioners, and so I just wanted to have my thoughts, but wanted to get feedback on what's been done in the past and considered and worked and not worked, et cetera.
It's your nickel, Mr. Gallion.
You know, most of the recent ones have been just written off because I think Anderson was a delinquent. Anderson Seed, they're no longer in business, so they just are written off in most cases. Eventually, most of them do pay. Some of them takes a couple hundred days. But I'm not familiar with what was done beforehand. I don't know, maybe Pat could offer more insight into that. But
so we just keep sending them bills every month or every quarter, or how do we do this?
I do not know how the division does it specifically on the revenue side. I believe there's a time frame for sending letters, 30, 60, 90, I believe.
Yes.
Does that sound right?
I'll go through the process with you. The at the time of the testing, the inspector will leave an invoice with the customer, with the operator, and that's their notice to pay the bill. Some of them pay right there. Some of them actually ask us if we can take a credit card, and we say, you know, that we can't, and if we could, it would really cut this back quite a bit.
Right.
So that's one aspect of it.
And why can't we take a credit card? Have we ever explored that?
I have.
And we can't because we lose 3%?
Well, it's not that bad. In fact, I've been talking to Bank of North Dakota this week and asked them about what options we have. I haven't put anything together in any kind of a memo, but I can kind of talk about what we've discussed and some of the options they've presented is they do have mobile devices that could be given to the inspectors to have out in the field. Could swipe cards right then and there. We could do it web-based. We could also have a terminal here in the office. And the cost for the terminals are between $400 and $500, and it is approximately a 3 to 4% charge per swipe. When you look at weights and measures, revenue, probably $400,000 a biennium, $200,000 per year. How many would go to a credit card? Maybe 30 to 40%. $70,000, $80,000 at 3, 4%, I don't think would cost us more than $400, $500 a month, which is really not that high of a cost when you look at what it takes to try to recover these and collect these funds. So it's very reasonable to implement credit cards.
I've seen applications for an iPad
not an option at this time with Bank of North Dakota. They claim that the iPad solution is not does not meet the security standards that the Bank of North Dakota requires.
Okay.
Well, just coming out with it.
Well, I mean, at your home when you do an iPad with your bank, is that saying Bank of North Dakota doesn't think that's? We can talk about that later.
They're saying that when you put your credit card in there over a web-based and that signal is sent out, it doesn't have the security criteria that they like. So maybe food for thought for everybody in the room. If you're putting credit cards into your iPad, maybe not the best of ideas.
Mm-hmm. So
or any computer, then.
Well, a landline. It's more the wireless signal through the cell towers that they don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's, I don't know. But the wireless terminals that do offer use cell towers, but they must have some kind of a different encryption. That's Steve's area.
They're much more highly encrypted. And they're going to a known source.
So, but an option, I'm trying to collect the information so I can put together a presentation for everybody to kind of take a look at. But from a financial perspective, I think it's something that could be looked at sooner rather than later.
But if you look at our total outstanding debt is $7,000, is that correct?
As of the time of this report was printed, yes.
And you
for the most part,
at $400 a month. So we'd be spending about $4,800 a year to reduce this number. So I don't know. Does it make sense?
I don't see very many on that list that I think would give you a credit card either.
Oh, really?
I think for the most part. I think one of our problems is when we do these scale tests and, you know, maybe it's a big franchise convenience store or something like that, or truck stop of some type. And so you hand over the bill to some young person that's in there on their first job, and, you know, they haven't had anyone come and test the gas pumps when they were working there before, and the boss probably never told them what to do if that happens, because it only happens just once every very rarely, and so they really don't know exactly what to do with it and put it aside or something, and next thing you know it's lost, and months go by and there's some corporate office doesn't realize their gas pumps were tested and that sort of thing, and then you've got the places where there's bankruptcies or insolvencies that are occurring. They probably aren't handing out credit cards voluntarily in the months leading up to those situations. So in either case, you know, I think those are a lot of our problem collections, and in none of those cases that I just named would credit cards have been offered to our inspectors. So I'm not sure what to do about the ones that are ultimately going to be going out of business in the coming months. We're probably just going to lose on those unless we demand payment immediately, and I don't know how that's going to go over. I don't think too well. But in the case of especially franchises, I don't know what the solution is, but it seems like there must be some way of knowing where that home office is and finding out what their preference for billing information is. Maybe we, rather than leaving a bill at the counter, need to be submitting a bill to a home office somewhere.
Yeah, I guess I'll give you my... You asked how it was done. I wanted to hear what they said before I threw my 2 cents in. But I guess the way I've always looked at this is that you keep the awareness out there. If Josh gets to the point where we need to be involved, and we would get involved. But I always looked at it as these reports out there, they run their course. If we get some that are way behind, it's up to the responsibility of our money guy to tell us this is one we got a concern with, and then we circle around with Pat and maybe send a commission letter out. But really, I think it's their age. You're right. We're not collecting as quick as we can. But by the same token, I think it's just the awareness of it is what you're trying to get to, because I think up until Josh got here probably 2 years ago, we didn't even do these reports. So he's really created these reports for us to get a feel for who's late. And I think from my viewpoint, if you'd give us, you know, top 10 that we should do something about, then you send a letter out from the portfolio holder or somebody, but then it comes back to the same discussion of if they don't pay our fines, then what do we do? So you just elevate the game to put the pressure back to them. I don't know about credit cards. I'm kind of along the line with Julia saying about cost. I think we just reinforce that you tell us what you think are the top offenders, and Pat looks through it, and we see if we need to get one more person involved. But
in the past, we've gone out and tried to collect some of that, and getting a state's attorney to go after some of those things.
Absolutely. We can't get them to pay call before you dig fines.
It's not that much money.
Yeah. and also, it should be noted that the big ones in the weights and measures department will be going away because we're no longer testing those.
Right.
So that's going to be someone else's problem to bill and collect on those.
Josh, do you have go ahead.
Do we have a policy of not testing somebody again if they haven't paid?
Well, before we go to that, I guess we aren't, that isn't the only thing that we do when we hand that invoice to the operator at the time of the testing. There are several other things that we do after that, if you were wondering about those. But, like, for example, then, approximately 30 days, but no sooner than 30 days after the inspection, we send a copy of the invoice that was left. We send another copy to the operator, identical invoice. And then no sooner than 60 days after the inspection, we send a reminder letter. And then no sooner than 90 days after the inspection, we send a certified letter with the invoice again.
Mm-hmm.
So we do all those We give them plenty of opportunity
right.
to pay it. But
and do we? Will we inspect them again if they haven't paid?
We haven't implemented anything like that.
Have we ever inspected somebody again and they still owe for the last year, 18 months later?
We probably would have.
That, to me, would be a reasonable step just to add to the process. Like, if you haven't paid your last bill, we won't inspect you again. But,
right.
I mean, why would we?
Well, to make sure we have accurate scales
well,
and
right,
and
but
devices.
Then they should pay on the demand or, you know, they should pay on the spot or something then. But there's a fee to the inspection. And there's a fee to them being in compliance. So if they want to be in compliance, they need to pay the fee.
Well, I think we just ratchet up the game a little bit, that you give a report that's a little more specific. If there are like 10 people there that you're really concerned about, and then you send a letter out from Commissioner Crispin as a portfolio holder, and then, I mean, that we get back to that same question of you can't force someone to pay, but we got to keep doing something. We're trying to work through that right now downstairs with the Secretary of State if we can pull somebody's license.
Yeah.
So that'd be the same thing this could eventually get to. If somebody doesn't pay, do you... the Secretary of State pulled their business license. But we can do a better job of telling us what you think are the top 10 offenders.
Mark their scale out of compliance if they haven't paid from the year before and mark it out of compliance because they haven't, you know, been inspected in 18 months.
You mean tag it non-commercial?
Right.
If we're testing them and they haven't paid from the previous inspection, we could go there with the truck pretty empty on fuel and fill up first.
All right.
Kind of a question, maybe Steve and kind of what Commissioner Christmas was getting at. Could we develop a system to have a billing location and a customer location so that we could send invoices to the actual billing location? Because as I look at the aging report, it says holiday number 721. Now, I don't know if that means there's 721 gas stations out there, but there's definitely more than one. And maybe this holiday station that's at the top of, you know, the list at 256 days past due, if we're sending them there, maybe the attendant there could care less. But if we send it to their headquarters and we knew that billing location, that may move things along faster. I don't know. Is that in the system?
There is a we try to maintain like a corporate address. If they don't want us to leave the invoice at the tested location, we ask them if they have a preferred location for billing, and maybe it's a corporate address. And so, I mean, I'm sure that in some cases we may have, you know, incorrect information, maybe outdated, but we do have in some cases we have corporate addresses for billing.
Well, maybe we have the inspectors confirm that each time that they've got the correct address for billing and make those corrections with the inspection reports.
Yep, and that is something that they are supposed to do.
Yeah.
So I don't know how consistent that is. Yeah. But.
Well, and it isn't a huge amount of money, but anyway, just wanted to talk through it. I would support and think we should implement not inspecting somebody again who hasn't paid in 18, it's 18 months, isn't it, when they get inspected every 18 months?
15.
So yep. Seems reasonable. I don't see a lot of people on here multiple times, though, so I don't know if that's a huge problem.
Okay.
So if you don't inspect them, then they continue to use their device?
You'd have to tag it.
Tag it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Is that where we're going then? Is that what we would?
I don't like when we get on the roads of starting to talk bills. And next thing you know, we're making policy changes to how we do business. I think the point here was, how do we cut down the number of people in that report? Is what I was thinking we started with. So,
would be one of the ways to do that.
Right, but that's where we. These discussion items are good, but before we start making changes in what they're doing, we should have some more thought process into it.
I think I would want to review our rules and the law too. You know, if just because there's some amount that a scale or a measuring device can be off, some tiny little amount, and so we I assume wouldn't be able to mark something as not available for commercial use because it's off by some really, really small amount. And I'm not sure legally whether we can take someone off of the approved commercial device list because they owe money to the state. You know, could we do it because they haven't paid their taxes? Or I don't know. I'd want to have some background on that before I would go along with
my
that.
My logic would be that they haven't had it tested, so it's not in compliance.
I want to review some things before I'm ready to jump on the...
Why don't, Josh, you put together a memo with what you think we should do to reduce that and talk to the directors about it. And then it's always that fine line between a discussion matter, the commission is something we can wrap up in 5-10 minutes by scheduling a work session on this. So why don't you do the famous... Well, whoever, it probably just isn't Pat, but if it is, come up with what you think is a recommendation to reduce these, and then bring that back up, and then if we that sounds reasonable, then we'll do something. If not, then we'll try another work session on it. I know the work gets frustrating, that sometimes we end up going to work sessions a lot, but that way at least we get a good chance for staff to run stuff around. Because I know what you're trying to do, and it's a good idea. It's just we have to think this all the way through. So, okay, let's do that. So... Come back the next meeting, Josh, with your plan. It gives you 3 weeks from today. All right. Siting application fee, Hess Corporation, 14-inch crude pipeline. Ms. Fedorchuk.
Let's see here which one this is.
Before.
Okay. So Pat put together a memo on this, right, Pat?
Yes, an email.
And I think maybe – okay, so – the issue in a nutshell, and we'll turn to Pat for more details, but this pipeline exists. It's being converted from a gathering line to a transmission line. They filed an application fee based on the cost of what they were adding to the line, which is some facilities at the beginning and the end. So the application fee was $5,000. We're going out there for a hearing. That's going to chew up a bunch of the application fee. The question is, should we have a construction inspection for this project? Because it is we do on new pipelines, and this is essentially a new pipeline, even though it's already in the ground. It's a new transmission pipeline. And so that's, we don't have enough money with the filing fee to hire a construction inspector, so we'd have to go back and potentially assess them an additional application fee, a higher one, potentially based on the cost of what the entire line would cost. So it's a policy question, and maybe we need a work session on it. But this one is coming up to us, isn't this one? We have a hearing
at the end of the month.
Yeah, hearing at the end of the month. So I wanted to at least get it out here for initial thoughts and see if you guys want to have a work session or how you want to handle it. There's a bigger issue of just construction inspections in general on new projects in previously sited corridors.
Projects that fall under the footprint. Yeah. Because we don't, what they do is certify to the commission under the footprint law. They certify to the commission that they're not going to impact any exclusion or avoidance areas. But they are doing a project out there. They are working the right of way or the corridor in the case of a transmission line, or they're working the site in the case of a site certificate, and they are impacting the environment. The commission does have the authority to request a fee, an application, or a fee for that kind of a filing, for processing that kind of a filing. And the question is, can that be, I guess, interpreted to mean we can ask for, when we set the fee, can we set it high enough to cover construction inspection if the commission wants to do a construction inspection? Because there is reclamation work that has to be done when they're done with the project, right? And there is pipe going in, or there is a facility going in.
Will $5,000 cover the cost of everything minus the construction inspection?
Yes.
On Hess, on this one.
I think it would.
Could we do the post-construction inspection ourselves?
Well, we used to do that, but right. We were short-staffed, so we went to construction inspections, and in the cases when we had application fees to use for that, the commission went that way.
Okay. Well, I guess my gut, this one, is that if we did this with Excel. We broke apart into two rate cases, and we had $125,000 filing for a rate case. So we broke it apart. And so if you think there's a legal basis of breaking this into three cases, and the company's willing to do it, why don't we just break it into three, and then we go do it?
Well, in this situation, you have three segments that are going to be combined into one pipeline. So these segments were built at different times. When you read the statute, it says that the application fee would be based on $5,000 for each $1 million of investment in the proposed facility. So you could interpret that to mean the investment, not just the upgrade portion, but the investment in the facility. And the company, John Morrison is here, and that was something that he saw in that language as well. And he said that they're willing to provide, the company's willing to provide us an estimate of what that investment would be, including the upgrade, and that they'd be willing to be assessed that fee based on that overall investment, and it would be enough to do a construction inspection then.
Well, that sure seems reasonable.
I don't think no one was thinking, if I understood the email correctly, about splitting up cases or making mm-hmm. more than one case. I think that three-segment question kind of tripped me up a little bit, too. Okay. But to me, it's now you have a jurisdictional facility. What's the investment in that facility? I mean, I think it's logical. It's easily logical that it's more than just the upgrade amount. I don't know. And if John's not, you know, going to be taking us to court on that concept.
we have absolutely no objection to solve your problem. It's easy to get done, and we can get it done and get it taken care of.
Sounds good to me.
And I think we should.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Randy?
I appreciate that kind of willingness to work with us so that we can work with them and get things
moved
done and taken right. care of and in the pipeline.
This is setting a precedent because not in this particular case, but it is setting a precedent because the commission is deciding that even that with existing lines that are being sited now, that you are going to do a construction inspection, and I can justify it because now you're going to be potentially issuing a corridor. That corridor has never been.
Yeah,
has never been.
That's the way it's done. Yeah, I'm tracking that. I don't
inspected.
See that. I don't see that's a. You're right. It is precedent because we've got lines before, but I think this is the right road to go down.
Okay.
Going once, going twice. Okay. All right. So do we have to do anything on that other than what we just did here?
We would have a motion assessing after we receive the estimate of the investment. We would have a motion assessing a filing fee.
All right, but we still have the money to go do the hearing, and we're going to do all that stuff. So, shouldn't affect anything there.
Right.
Okay, perfect. All right. Good job, Julie. Good catch. Good job, Pat. All right, Mr. Lean, back to structure movements for our famous CapEx line.
Okay. The company has filed requests to move four segments of line. And at this point, we're asking how to proceed with that. Now that we have the new legislation for pipelines that let them do those kind of moves just on making a certification to the commission that they're good moves.
Is this something you think we can figure out in 10 minutes?
Yeah. in the past, we had a little process going where I would send an email around saying I'm going to give you staff approval if I don't hear back from you. And
as long as it was within the corridor in a certain range, or a certain range, right?
Well, in this case, we're going outside the corridors, right. and we've done that before, too, with that same process. So the question is, Do you want to continue doing that now, or do you want to change that process somehow, taking into account the certifications and things that are being done with the pipelines?
Boy.
That was kind of a quick...
No, but the question is, how far do you relegate staff ability to do that? If they're moving it 15 miles away, that's probably too far. If they're moving it 200 feet, that's probably okay. It's that, because one of these is a half-mile shift, right?
No, a fifth of a mile.
Okay, fifth of a mile.
Well, and along with that, what sort of documentation do we want to look at? Do we want any sort of set documentation that we want to look at and have on a, you know, standard basis for this kind of thing? Or do we leave it up to staff to decide what's needed and leave it at that?
And the reason it's coming here today, too, is because of House Bill 1147 for pipelines. The commission figured out what they really want in terms of documentation, supporting documentation for situations where the pipeline is going outside of the corridor. And we put together a document. And so we kind of figured out for pipelines, do you want to apply any of that to electric lines?
Boy, that's probably a longer question than we can have prepared to answer today. unless legal has something that'll clear.
1147 is an interesting process to use as a possible guide. However, there was much discussion, if you recall, about it not applying to transmission lines and why, including Basin Electric being opposed to the concept, knowing that they would be even in more trouble with their landowners if they tried to do something like this. I think you need to at least think about the difference between the pipeline, which eventually is buried and hopefully nobody ever remembers is there because nothing goes wrong, and the transmission line before you go too simple on the process. That's just one thing I wanted to mention. Plus, this case was appealed.
So is your view that the process under 1147 would be simpler than Jerry making a staff recommendation and approving it?
The staff recommendation was for is in our rules today, and that's the narrowest, you know, like the bucket one.
Right.
That was no change. 1147 actually made that a little harder than it is today for pipelines.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a little easier for transmission lines because it's still in our rules the way it was originally. And this is like buckets 3 and 4.
But what do we do under buckets 3 and 4 now, currently?
For transmission lines?
Yeah.
If you're outside the corridor, you apply. You apply.
Well, under construction transmission lines? Apply for and do a hearing and everything over again? So is that what we
notice of an amended certificate is what I recall in the past. I mean, that's the conversation that prompted 1147 with Brian Biella, wasn't it?
Yeah. Except for now, the exception that the commission gave staff the ability to give approval for corridor going out for a pipeline going outside an approved corridor, designated corridor, when. It didn't get too far away. It didn't get crazy.
There were one or two
pipelines, but with
right before 1147.
Yeah, what Julie just said is I think where I would come down at is that pipelines are pipelines, power lines are power lines. Let's keep them separate. That was the way law was designed that way with good intention to keep them separate. So let's not try to blur power line stuff into the new pipeline law. And whatever we've done in the past with power lines, I'm still okay with it. Staff makes a recommendation. If we don't like it, we ourselves can then do something on it. But we don't change what we've done before with power lines.
You know, I don't make the approvals without putting them out to you. And then afterwards, there goes a motion on the agenda to acknowledge it. And so it's the commission actually making the approval.
Right.
And in the pipeline case, these people are doing this without getting an approval.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the big difference. So that's where, as we're going now, we're kind of on a case-by-case basis as to if you think the limits are starting to get pushed, you can say, let's look at this one harder. So
currently, right now, a transmission line under construction that wants to change their route and corridor is staff approval.
Good example is what we just did today. Staff made a recommendation on those lines, and we did it on consent today. That's the way we usually follow it.
Yeah. Consent. And those were on the Minn Kota line,
yep.
Structure location changes. And I sent an email around on them and then didn't get a response. So then I sent another email to Minn Kota saying that they have staff approval of it. And then it went on the agenda for a motion for you to acknowledge that staff approved it.
Which we did today.
Yeah, it was within the corridor, but we've done it outside the corridor a couple of times. And with this case, I put it on agenda. I thought you should take a look at what we're doing and make sure this is what you want to do.
If the reroute were a long reroute and it were way outside the corridor, I don't think staff would even prepare the email that said that they were intending to give approval. They would bring it to the commission, and it would normally go to with a notice of hearing to amend the application or to amend the certificate.
Right. How about this for a way forward? Is it, why don't we schedule a work session and go case by case on these four changes? Because when I looked at it, there's a couple that I was like, these look pretty easy. But the one I was very concerned about, to give you my viewpoint, on these reroutes that they're asking for.
The one does move it a fifth of a mile in. Mm-hmm. And
well outside the corridor.
And moves just the whole corridor and everything pretty good.
Right.
And they have their reasoning, and it is at the request of the person that owns the land. But something like that, with a work session, or maybe if you wanted to even call it an informal hearing, the company would have a chance, if it were an informal hearing, to explain to you just why the landowners
want. That's probably the way. And this is just my thoughts, but that's probably the way to go down. Because as Alana pointed out, this case was a 2-1 vote. It went under appeal, and it held the first part. And before it ever got to the second part of the appeal, they withdrew it because the one landowner got satisfied. So we get this is not your typical case.
My comments are not so much. I recognize that the commission eventually takes action, even in those routine within the corridor ones, but it's whether the commission action has to be based on a notice,
right,
before there's action. Mm-hmm. That's the concern, that people know that this is about to change and have a chance to comment or something.
And what's our policy on that? And how do we handle those?
We used to require applications until that one that Chris wrote the little memo on that's kind of started it. Then we had, after that, we had Bakken during 1147.
But that was a pipeline.
Yeah.
I'm talking about transmission lines. What's our policy for noticing outside corridor changes on transmission lines?
We did one of these after Chris's pipeline one. We did one, I can't remember which one right now, but for a transmission line as well, right, where we let them move something out of the corridor. I think it was a Minn Kota case. Their big line from Center to Grand Forks.
We
adjusted, without notice, we adjusted the corridor a little bit. So that's kind of our precedent on it.
But we haven't cited commission lines like this for 30 years until recently. So there's a big there's a big delta here that we've done a lot in the last 3 years. But prior to that, we hadn't cited 345s for decades.
And this started out as a way to, when you run into trouble when you're doing construction, a way to okay a movement in a structure without having to make crews wait for a commission meeting. And,
right,
you know, you don't want crews standing by or a progress held up on something and lots of dollars being spent for nothing. Because we can't get a commission meeting together. So that's how we ended up with this process.
There's more to it than that, though, Jared, to be fair. It was also, too, you had a desire from certain folks to move things along quicker. It was not quite that clean.
Yeah. But we did start. Then we started narrowing the corridor width.
Right, because of the footprint law.
Yeah. And So now with narrowing the corridor width, all of a sudden, if you change the route a little bit, you're outside the corridor. And so it just snowballs from there.
Okay, well, go back, circle back around with... go ahead, Julian. I'll get my thoughts, I guess.
Well, in terms of the transmission, how we're going to proceed with changes to the transmission routes in progress. It sounds like we pretty much do staff. If staff looks at it and makes a recommendation or approves it, we may do notice, we may not. It's just kind of our judgment.
Well,
within the corridor.
Within the corridor, we have a rule. I think it's in the rules. I think I just read it. So that is, at some point, you made that law. You said, this is the process we're going to use. And we don't have that for outside the corridor. That's the trigger point.
Okay.
That was the trigger point in the pipeline cases.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the premise of the pipeline cases was this: can we make this tweak, or do we have to have some sort of process for 3 or 4 weeks while a notice runs? You know, and the notice is to change the order, so it's a slightly different notice than a siting app. It's to amend the order if the corridor has already been studied, the new corridor, that sort of thing. So we can give you the rest of the precedent. I mean, you were here for the Bakken one, and there were, like, we had those two memos, I think, from Chris, the two cases, I think, where they had started. We produced them at that work session, and we can find them again. Then that would be the total commission policy on this outside the corridor, because I think you should separate out this within the corridor. That's covered by rule.
Okay, and we can separate further outside the corridor transmission lines, because mm-hmm. the pipelines is done.
Right.
And we've got a full procedure for that now.
Right.
But we're going to have a huge pipeline or transmission line coming up, and we can guarantee we're going to get route changes on that one.
Right.
After, you know, that's under progress. So it would be helpful to sort
well,
of
I also
decide
think
how we're going to do
hope
these.
That the staff team is working on the appropriate corridor width, which is, again, something we talked about in pipelines as a partial solution.
In the basin line, right?
Yes, right. So that the width is appropriate for making these decisions and not so wide that later you...
Right.
You wish, mm-hmm. you know, there wasn't, the footprint law didn't apply. In the pending applications, that's a concern. I think Basin is aware of it and working on it, and I assume staff is.
I do think it would be helpful to use the pipeline process as a model in one respect, and that is that we thought through, here's what we want to see. And we have that now on a consistent basis, like here's what we're going to want to have on record for making these decisions. And it seems like it would be good to be consistent that way so that we're asking CapEx the same for the same documentation when we think this through, and everybody else in the future, here's what we need to think this through.
See, that's where I think I would come down different on that, because transmission law is much different than pipeline law when it comes to condemnation. And so there's a whole different trigger. I agree with some of that, but They're different rules. The federal transmission laws and how they take land is much different for transmission than pipelines. So that's where the concern of doing things outside a corridor with staff approval, even us without opening up to the public, we've really set ourselves up for litigation. So I still think if it's inside the corridor, staff approval is perfect. If it's outside the corridor, we probably have to open it up for at least an informal break. So that's kind of what we're taught. We're starting what we're going to do with this case right now.
I agree. But so you don't misunderstand me, I'm not suggesting we make it easier. I'm suggesting we make sure we're covering all our bases on a consistent, you know, in a consistent manner, making sure that one time we don't ask for this, this, and that, and then make our decision, and the next time we ask for three different things and make our decision, that we're doing this, you know, and have a thoughtful policy, or maybe we always send a notice of opportunity for hearing or whatever it is. But I think, you know, we have to have something that's consistent for those very reasons that you just outlined, that we aren't cutting corners.
So back to where we started. What are we going to do? There's no way where I think we're comfortable with staff approval and then on this line, for me personally.
So then you said an informal on that?
That's what if when it all comes together, I would send out the staff approval memo.
Okay.
But I already know that you're going to want to know more about it. And so I just put the thing on informal. And a regular informal hearing. Mm-hmm. And the company comes in and explains the changes. And if the commission's fine with them, they can be approved.
Sounds like a reasonable next step, but I would look at our attorney that maybe you'll figure out some flaws in that because of the public notice part of it.
Well, yeah, and the next informal is 3 weeks from now, and do we have a written request from the company at this point that could be the basis of a notice of opportunity?
We do have. I guess that's a big question is, are we going to require a notice of opportunity to go outside of the hearing, outside of the corridor? I mean, we didn't in a couple of last cases that we've done this with.
Right. And that those cases, and now I think you don't have authority to have a corridor change without some formal procedures. I really don't think the commission has it, whether it's citing procedures or amending order procedures. I know we did do it. I understand that we did do it. As Bruce Hagen would say, because we did it wrong for 20 years doesn't make it right today. but anyway, and you are free to do what you choose to do. I just wondered if the informal is going to be on the 30th or whenever the next meeting is. I thought, well, you could actually get a notice out and it would be a non-issue.
Right.
You know, maybe another, you might need another week.
Randy, do you have any thoughts on this?
Nope. I do not have any thoughts. I'm waiting to let the whole thing evolve a little bit here and figure out. Well, I'm trusting staff here a long ways to.
I guess back to the point that I started with for me is that I'm not comfortable going outside the corridor in this line unless there's a chance for the public to weigh in. That's where I'll fall down on this. And so you could prepare your staff memo in the informal, but we still would. I think you got to give the public a chance if you're going outside the assigned corridor, even though it is the same landowners. It's outside the approved corridor. And it's not even close to the approved corridor. If it was 5-10 feet out, you could maybe fudge a little bit, but it's well outside the corridor. But that's just one person. So if you did the other way, I mean, we still have to vote on it.
We could do the notice, and if we have it on the next agenda, then
we can hold a special meeting. We just to do that. That's not a problem, I don't think.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. If your informal was 3 weeks out, you could get this out in the next day or two, and you would lose a couple days, maybe.
Okay. So the going outside the corridor, will that be what the notice involves? Or because I'll tell you what, they've actually got some other changes on this pipeline that I'm trying to fish out with them right now, or on this transmission line, and put them all together.
Well, it's up to them to figure out what they want. Don't they understand that this is a project that has been very controversial all the way through, and now is not the time for them to start getting cute? And they've got an approved route in corridor?
I understand that enough to know that if this gets out of hand, they'll drop these changes.
Well, and that's the point.
And then everybody will be mad at them.
Yeah, so we're back in the same situation where these are requested by the landowners.
Yeah. Much different, though, that this is a much more sensitive route, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're taking these changes on because they're being asked to. And they were afraid to take them on for how much hassle it might cost. But everybody's happier.
But where were these changes in the beginning when we were doing this project to start with? They obviously didn't talk to these landowners, or the landowners
agreed.
Didn't.
How did they come up later? But I don't know the details. The one that's moving a fifth of a mile like that, my understanding is they're partitioning that land somehow, and the landowner wants it to be on only one of the partitions. So he'll have both partitions, but one of them will not have the power line on it. That's all I know about that one. Whether or not that was in the works before or not, I don't know.
Could we maybe close the loop? You circle back with the company and share all the discussion that's taken place here and say, listen, I can't speak for everybody, but I know that one commissioner is very uncomfortable with getting too far outside the corridor without a notice. Yeah. Put that back on them and say, okay, what do you guys want to do? Give us your final answer, and then we'll proceed forward on that. If they come back and they've got a couple minor changes and we're to get back the staff approval realm, great. If they have some whole house changes to get you well outside the corridor, then we do the notice. But give them one more chance of, okay, what is it you really want to do here?
Okay. But when we ask that, are they going to say, well, we want to keep it the way it was. We're just doing this for landowners.
I think they want to keep their people, keep the landowners happy. And I think they'll make an effort to do that.
Okay.
But that's why there's no downside. If you do a notice of opportunity for hearing, the landowners come in and say, yeah, we like this.
You know, until somebody comes and answers your notice of opportunity, because there were a few people there that were opposing the project.
But we can't be afraid of people coming to say their piece. We put the same weight on it we put on it before. I had
people
tailing me in Fargo because we voted for this pipeline. It's just their power line. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, I agree. So I think what I'm understanding here is that when we go outside the corridor, we're going to want a notice of opportunity at least.
And then the next legislative session, all these companies will come to us and they'll want to be part of this new law.
They go back and get the appropriate size corridor.
Right. They could get an appropriate size corridor now.
That has been our pressure on them to keep the corridors smaller.
Because of the footprint law. Here we go again.
We're telling them that they need to survey the entire corridor for a pedestrian survey.
All right.
We don't tell them to keep it small. We tell them to study what they think they need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they tell them to do the pedestrian survey over the whole width of the corridor, and that costs more money. So they are narrowed down, and that's all has been because we don't want wide corridors because of the language in the law that says they can put whatever they want in a corridor.
Right.
Commissioner Christman.
Now I think I'm ready to have my opinion more clarified. You know, because the pipeline or power line, in any case, company, maybe doesn't do a very good job of clarifying to the landowners where something is going to go and what the impacts are and what the possibilities are for altering it in the meantime before it gets built. Because they fail to do a good job, I don't want to punish the landowners. And so if the landowners have a simple and logical change request, I would hope that we would be accommodating and getting the company to do that if it works out for them. In this case, I don't see anything wrong with having the hearing, and if protesters who, for all kinds of other reasons, want to come in and oppose something, but has really, I don't see why their protests would have anything to do with whether it's where it's already approved or the new route a fifth of a mile away. I would think that we would not give that very much weight in our decision-making process. So I don't think the company should feel like they have a lot to lose in having a hearing so that we can just make sure that there's not some real good reason why it shouldn't be moved a fifth of a mile as opposed to where it's already approved.
Fair enough.
And we're just talking opportunity for hearing.
But not anyway, I'm getting the message I should do a notice of opportunity.
Well, and as Ryan just reminded me, can we get the response from the company in writing? We need, their response to what it is they really are asking for, or do we already have everything and we don't have any more questions for them in writing?
We have the application to move it and the reasons why.
Okay, but you said there were some more in the works.
I asked them.
They could all be handled in the same notice.
Yeah, right. They had some other movements that they didn't think they had needed to to have approved, but I think they do because they stay in line with the existing approved route. So they're providing those. And the other thing they're providing is some documentation to back up their statement that there's no exclusion or avoidance areas affected.
All right, Joe, you clean that up with them and figure out what we need to do for that notice of opportunity for hearing.
Okay.
Okay. And then if we need to schedule a special meeting, then we'll do so. Fair enough? All right. Going once, going twice. Julie? Randy? Good. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Sheldon, quick update on the State Fair.
First of all, I'd like to thank Commissioner Josh for the burnt popcorn smell.
Okay.
On the 12th floor. I thought it was too. State Fair, the 19th through the 27th in Minot. Plan on having the booth staffed 5 out of the 8 days to stay on our budget. Also this year, we finally are co-op advertising.
If you talk to our agent Galleon about the budget, so when you say that statement, there is money that's allocated for the fair.
We are using approximately the same as we have the last 2 years.
Okay, but circle back around with him just to make sure.
Well, if I can get through the smell.
Okay.
What were the dates again, Scott?
The 19th through the 27th. And I was going to say, we also are a co-op advertising with Call Before You Dig One Call this year. So I'm happy to say our booths are fairly close together. So it's a good partnership. Also, I should mention on July 18th, One Call will be having a motorcycle, custom-made Harley-Davidson, One Call motorcycle parked out in front of the Capitol, promoting One Call. So,
are we promoting it or are they?
It's going to be co-op promoting.
Joint effort.
Who made the bike?
You can't touch it. Yeah, no, it's just to look at.
Who made it?
So are we doing a news conference or anything like that?
Are you
doing something?
Chad's got the lead on. He's sending out press releases, and we're hoping to get some media to come by. So he's really taking the lead on it. We're just helping him facilitate cups and whatever else we need.
And where to put it. So, very good. Stay fair.
So you've got everything there, and you're going to stay in there. But the big thing is make sure you stay in there. I don't want this to get out of control for staff to where we got 30 people going up there getting 30 hotel rooms. So when you get done with who's going to be covering where, can you run that through Josh?
Correct. Yep, and I've been working with Daryl on it to make sure. I just really think the talent that we're going to have at the booth this year is going to be the best we've had so far.
Okay, I just want to make sure my colleagues know that there is some money that's going to get spent here, but we don't want it to be out of control.
Correct.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you, sir.
It is nice to hear that we have premium talent.
Yes. All right, Daryl, in a very quick update on our phone changeover.
We are, the thing has been sent up.
Daryl / Steve, I guess.
Yeah. Phone has been sent up for the change. It's been sent up to ITD.
So and when will that change take effect?
I'm not sure when that's going to be. Figuring about maybe a
they
week.
Picked it up, so I would guess within 48 to 72 hours.
Okay, just to make sure everybody knows when that happens, what it'll be, kind of go back to the old ways where phone will ring. If their first request, they want to disconnect, they'll press 1, it'll go away from us. Everything else will drop into the phone tree of between Jerry is the first, that's her primary job, then it drops into a loop between Scott, Shelley, and Kara. Correct?
No, we changed that.
We changed that,
Scott
okay.
Scott has been removed.
Scott has been
All
removed.
All administrative staff will be in that loop now.
Why is Scott removed?
By the request of Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Well, why was Scott removed? Because that's part of your job is to answer the phone.
He answers consumer complaints. I felt that Scott's time should be spent on answering consumer complaints and not every single phone call that comes to the commission.
Right, but shouldn't he be in the loop, though, too? Isn't that part of your position description is to answer the phone? To consumer?
I'd have to double check.
No, it's not.
Okay. Okay, well. Yeah, but the... All right, well, we'll try and see what happens.
So what... Can we go through what the order is? Jerry?
That has not been determined at this particular time.
See, that's where here we go again. Is it just gets my hackles back up again? It's half her time, and her job is to answer the phone.
That's the role.
And then as we get into this loop, there's some people that have other jobs that shouldn't be answering the phone. So we got to find that sweet spot.
Right, and we're working on that. Right?
Okay,
And I think I brought the model down. I want to go around and meet with all.
It is an admin function, and it seems like it should be in the admin
pool. Right, but a lot of times, most of the calls, he's the best to answer them between him and Kara. And so taking Scott out of the loop, I don't know, but I would never say no.
Well, he's going to get all the calls that are appropriate for him, and he's going to have, you know, time on his hands. You know, for Scott's position, I think he should be free as much as he can to deal with the details of his job description and not answering phone calls, you know, average, the general phone calls. So
okay, well, let's try it out and see what happens. We'll talk maybe more later. We got to make sure that the appropriate people are answering the phones. I'm with you. Okay.
One point of clarification, and that is that piece has not been finalized with ITD, so that will be a little later coming online. The change of the people in the loop. So once it's formalized, I'll get requests down.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. All right, let's get the scheduling, see if we can get through this thing by 6 o'clock. NISC presentation, Mr. Cole.
You had an email from them suggesting that they would like to come in and make a presentation to you. I requested dates that would work for them. What I got back were a couple of dates that did not work for them. So the two dates in July that they said no to were Thursday and Friday, the 25th and 26th. Once they moved into August, it looked like they would try to work around the schedule. So what they did ask is for two options.
Okay.
What were those two options?
We have to give them to them.
Oh.
They. I'm thinking go right to August is what I'm thinking. We have a PI meeting. I have August 7th and 8th is pretty open right now for me. I don't know where Randy and Julie are.
Any particular time?
Yep. Those look good.
Mr. Chrisman?
I'm getting a password incorrect thing on here.
That's not good.
What day did you say?
Either August 7th or 8th, those are both pretty open for me. They're wide open, actually, for me.
You say like 11? How many hours? 1 hour? Was it 1 hour that he wanted?
We found the enemy. It is within. And then, Steve, do you want to study the discussion with the commission on the study? Could we do that almost in parallel with this?
Weekly.
Would that be all right? So we did like one at 10 and one at 11?
What day did you say now?
I said August, what did I say?
7th and 8th.
7th and 8th.
Good to go.
Good to go. Well, could we do your study at 10 and then this presentation at 11?
Okay.
On the 8th? Just because?
Sure.
Andy, okay?
It's Schaefer's birthday on the
8th. So right. For the 8th, is the 7th still open if that doesn't work for them?
Mm-hmm.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
All right, that was easy enough.
Please let me know.
That was easy.
Okay, then the...
Let me know if the 8th doesn't work.
Will do.
Okay, now what's the earliest we can do that hearing for the South Dakota SIP? What, as far as the publishing dates?
We do have
the motion we'll have to do, but we should set a date, though, while we're on scheduling. What's the earliest we can, if we vote on that now, that we can get it out? And
I think next time, it'd be the end of July, so it'd be the end of August.
Looks perfect.
Because we had to August 20th in this initial motion.
20th works for me.
Of August?
I'd go no sooner than like the 10th of August. I didn't count it out. But.
Randy just said the 20th works for him. How's the 20th for you, Julie?
I mean, not August, September.
Yeah,
September.
September?
September.
Okay. Just saying after the 10th. So we're into September now.
Well, we have a commission meeting the 11th, formal hearing the 12th.
Where will that be held? Here?
It'll be here. So we don't have to travel anywhere. Well, there's the 13th or the 16th. How do those two work for you two?
The 10th works too, the 13th.
The 10th of September?
Yeah, doesn't it?
Late night council meeting.
Well, just lunch. The morning is...
I don't know how long that hearing will go.
The hearing on... Oh, do we have a hearing that morning?
No, we're trying to schedule a hearing now.
Oh, I see.
So I don't know that we'd want to...
I think that'll take more than a half a day, probably.
It might. And it might not.
I see what you're saying. Okay. So you said...
I just threw out there the 13th or the 16th.
I prefer...
16th works for me. 19th works for me.
16th works for you? Okay.
Look at the
16th. How does that sound? September 16th? All right. And that'll meet all everybody's requirement? Fair enough.
Okay. 2 months.
Let us start at 9 o'clock. Okay to start? All right. So then that'll be...
September 16th.
Yeah.
Okay. So then we need to... What are you saying, Patrick?
The notice is going today.
Not
today, but as soon as it's printed and signed.
Okay. But isn't that the point of what we're doing right now? We just scheduled it for the 16th at 9. We'll do this motion consolidating what we just did. And then when you get the date put together, then we sign it.
Okay.
Sorry. Right? I'll make sure I'm tracking too.
Yeah, but weren't you thinking? Yeah, we could have had it earlier because you were counting that we wouldn't be doing this till our next meeting.
All right, well, then let's go back to the drawing board again. If we do it today.
Well, it won't be today because it's not physically in existence, but it'll probably be tomorrow.
Okay, if we do it by Friday, when can we have it announced in all the papers it needs to be?
Monday is what day? What's the date of next Monday?
15th.
22nd. So you
need
30 days from 22nd. Mm-hmm. So I guess that would be August 22nd or after.
20 days. That week is out.
That's the rate case week, so that's a bad week. So then actually we're into September. Actually, I think that's the earliest date even considering all the above. Okay, you guys okay with staying with what we just did? Mm-hmm. Okay.
September 16th.
September 16th at 9 o'clock. Okay, so therefore now we'll go back to the motion. So this is the motion that we need to do what we got to do now.
It's for hearing all four cases together, and it's simply amending what you already did.
Okay.
So that it doesn't have to be like taken out.
All right.
Just kind of
and then you'll finish the last part so we can sign it with the September 16th date and we can do this and keep rolling.
Yes. Okay. Hopefully if you're around tomorrow to sign, people be here tomorrow. Okay. Well, yeah, we have our meeting. So.
Okay. Julie, I think this is your motion. You wanna...
Are we doing this right now?
That would be the best so we can then get it noticed.
I don't see a hearing date for this.
It doesn't have a date in it.
We're not putting that. Okay.
We don't put those dates in ever. They're just usually in the notice that's right behind the motion.
Okay.
But we didn't
type. All right. I move the commission amend its previously adopted July 10th, 2013 motion issuing a notice for hearing in case number PU-13-79 and case number PU-13-84 and its previously adopted July 10th, 2013 motion issuing a notice for hearing in case number PU-13-83 and case number PU-13-85 as follows. Believing that there will be no prejudice to the rights of the parties or the public interest, and finding the cases involve similar questions of law and fact, I move the Commission consolidate under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 69-02-04-04, Otter Tail Power Company Environmental Cost Recovery Rider Tariff Case Number PU 13-79, Otter Tail Power Company Environmental Cost Recovery Rider rates case number PU 13-84, MDU Company Environmental Cost Recovery Rates case number PU-13-83, and MDU Company Environmental Cost Recovery Tariff case number PU 13-85, and issue a notice of consolidated hearing.
Second.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there any further discussion? Since seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, thank you, Gerald. Thank you, Julie.
I was tempted, Mr. Chairman, to have our executive secretary read back the motion, but I decided not to, in the interest of time.
Okay. So, Mr. Diller, you will talk to the companies and let them know what we just did here. Now, Alana, do we need to, we'll need to find a judge, and do we need to break apart into two staff on this?
I guess that depends if the advocacy staff or the economic regulation staff thinks that we need to have advocacy staff appointed.
I guess at this point, I don't feel like we need to.
Okay.
I don't know what we would say differently than the company will tell you.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't think we'll even testify unless you give us enough. From what I heard today, you want to know why should we pay the higher costs? I do have some concerns I'm just going to share with Alana, but if that's the real question, it seems like having the company come in with witnesses to tell us what another group of people decided and why they decided it, how they decided it, almost seems like
hearsay.
It's hearsay, yeah. And so I wonder how we're really going to accomplish what we're trying to accomplish, but that's something I was going to talk to Alana after.
Sure. Well, the point is we don't need to, you don't think we have to break into staff right now. If you do, then just let us know. Okay.
So we'll get an ALJ. You were going to check on the fee, right?
Right.
And so if we don't have one, we'll get one. Because it's allowed under the statute.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, Steve, you were raising your hand for something.
Jim brought to my attention that he is not going to be here on August 8th, and he would like to be involved in the IT discussion. So if it turns out that we have to split that, is that okay?
To August 7th? That's fine by me. Is that fine by you, too?
Let's just make the whole thing August 7th.
Okay, how about that?
I'll shoot for August 7th. Okay.
Now, you'll be here that day. Are you kidding me?
Okay. In the morning.
All right.
Now
that we've pretty much ran everybody out of here. So thank you, Julie and Randy. These get to be long. We go 3 weeks apart in the summer, but it was worthwhile. Yeah, I think so, too. All right. Anything else? Going once, going twice. We'll close the administration portion of our meeting. Thank you.